Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This breakfast for a simple reason, because as busy as we are, as many tasks as pile up, during this season, we are reminded that there's something about the resurrection, something about the resurrection of our Savior Jesus Christ that puts everything else in perspective.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill.
It is the Savage Nation. I'm live. I'm back from wherever I was, where I'll never go again. There's a far, far better place that I go than I have ever been. Welcome to the program. There's Obama pretending. Well, you know, let me put it this way. Let me be benevolent. He claims to be a practicing Christian. And I would say for a man with two Muslim fathers, he's doing a very good job of practicing being a Christian. Okay, cymbal shot. Bing, bang, boom, bing, bing, bum. Can you believe this? All of a sudden he found religion. It reminds me of people who get convicted of a crime. They go to jail and they find Jesus. Cymbal shot. Bing, bang, boom, bing, bing, bum. I mean, guys, I'm giving you one-liners here. You got to let the audience know that this is funny. You know what I'm saying? You got to punctuate it somehow. Most of them at this point of the day and this time of the year, they're brain dead. They just paid taxes. Their daughter ran off with a girlfriend. The wife ran off with a girlfriend a few years ago. I mean, there's nothing left in their life. They turn the show on. You got to let them know it's funny. I mean, give them a cymbal shot. Let's practice. Get the cymbal shot ready. Ready? Play a cymbal shot. Okay, let's start again. So I understand President Obama gave remarks at a White House Easter prayer breakfast where he claimed that the Jesus Christ was his savior. And my line was, he claims he's a practicing Christian. And for a man with two Muslim fathers, he's doing a very good job of practicing at being a Christian. Okay, now you got it. Now we're started. All right. Mr. Obama, you can't pee on our backs and call it rain. Cymbal shot. I think I'm going to use it all day today. This guy, hey, what do you got? Something wrong? I said cymbal shot. What has to happen? Where'd he go? Charles, that was the wrong time for it. Let's start again, Charles. Let's start again. How about playing Tears on My Pillow by Little Anthony and the Imperials, and we'll start the show all over again. Little Anthony and the Imperials, Tears on My Pillow, a little rock and roll to get the show moving. I don't know what's wrong with people. What, is everyone on vacation again?
You don't remember me, but I remember you.
So I'm in the car today. I get stuck behind a school bus in the afternoon. And the young man who drives me says, oh, yes, it's Wednesday. The kids go home early on Wednesday in California. I said, what? He said, oh, yes. He said, as far as I can remember, they've always given them off early on Wednesday. I said, early for what? They come out and they can't eat. They can't add. They can't read. They can't write. They don't know how to hold down a job, but they give them off a half a day. Thanks for the California Federation of Teachers. You hear? The unions, your friends, the unions. They need a half a day off so they can have a teacher training lesson on how to screw the taxpayer. We got great sound for you and everything else. I got personal stories I'm not going to tell you because they're too personal. I've got impersonal stories I may tell you because they're not too personal. And I've got you some public stories that I will tell you because they're public. Egypt's new government courts Iran. Now, if it was up to me, I would take Anderson Cooper, who celebrated the overthrow of Mubarak. Remember when Mubarak was being thrown out of Egypt? Now, of course, he was a dictator. But he was sort of a benevolent dictator, and he was, more importantly, he was our friend in the largest Muslim country on earth. But this West Hollywood dimwit went over there with his tight dungarees and talked about the men in tight dungarees and how it was a wonderful thing that they were rioting and revolting and how we were going to see democracy in Egypt. And I was screaming every step of the way, you idiot, you. You morons, you. Don't you see what's coming? It's Iran Redu. And now that we see it's Iran Redu, Iran and Egypt signaled they were moving quickly to thaw decades of frosty relations in order to topple the U.S., Israel, and Saudi Arabia. In other words, everything that I wish I had been wrong. That's, let me put it to you that way. You think I want to be right with my negative prognostications? Do you think I want to be right in how I see what this loser is doing in the White House, this faker and his wife? The first lady, don't get me started on her. It's supposed to be hands off. She flies in a 737 owned by the government, paid for by you, to go on a stinking left-wing show on cable news, and I'm supposed to pay for that? When has a first lady ever abused power like this? When have we ever had a couple that is abusive as these two? Never. Never. I have a book coming out in September called Abuse of Power. Great title. No one's ever used it. Luckily, I got it. The cover is on michaelsavage.com. Coming in September, Savage's first thriller based on a true story. Now, it's not about Obama. It really isn't. What is it about? And I'm going to show you why, what I'm talking about it. Product description on Amazon from the New York Times bestselling author and controversial radio talk show host comes a high-intensity debut thriller, the story of a disgraced network journalist who uncovers a chilling terrorist plot. You want me to summarize this book for you and you'll see where I'm going with this? Jack Hatfield is a hardened former war correspondent who rose to national prominence for his insightful, provocative commentary. But after being smeared as a bigot and extremist by a radical media watchdog group, he ultimately loses his job and finds himself working in obscurity as a freelance news producer in San Francisco. Hatfield is on a ride along with the SFPD bomb squad when a seemingly routine carjacking turns deadly. After police find several pounds of military-grade explosives in a jacked car, and when the FBI urges Hatfield to stay out of it, he knows he's onto something big. This event will open up a shadowy trail that leads Hatfield to Tel Aviv, London, Paris, and back again to the United States, where he works with a beautiful and seductive Yemeni intelligence agent and a veteran Green Beret to expose a terrorist group known as the Hand of Allah and a plot within the highest corridors of power that will make 9/11 look like child's play. In this lightning-paced first thriller, spanning the globe from Europe and Israel to the back alleys of San Francisco's Chinatown, a reporter must make the choice between protecting his own life and investigating a terrorist cell whose goal is nothing less than total political control, no matter what the cost. That's a product description of my book, Abuse of Power. I guarantee you this. You say it's way ahead of the publication, but I'm so excited by it. I had to tell you about it and had to put the cover on my website months ahead. I'm doing it because I want to do it. And frankly, I don't. Okay, now don't ask me why I said that, because I have no reason for having said that, other than I'm a God-fearing man. And that no one knows where, let alone in the next week, the next month, or the next year. Nobody listening to this show can tell me where they're going to be in the next minute, the next month, the next year. You don't know. God has total power over us. God knows everything. God controls everything. Yeah, we have free will up to a certain point. But I'll tell you, things happen in a person's life where in the blink of an eye, you recognize how fragile life is in the blink of an eye, a child or your own life. Blink of an eye. And if that doesn't humble you, nothing will. That's all I can say. I was born humble, I live humble, and I hope to die humbly. Anyway, I got off the track a little bit, but I'm telling you what's going on in this country right now is something beyond comprehension. Let me explain it to you in another way. Without getting too deeply into the news. I was speaking with two pilots yesterday flying back. We were talking. Had a long time to talk. At 45,000 feet, you get a lot of time to talk. When you're closer to God, I guess you talk more clearly. And they said to me, Mr. Savage, what is it that you think is going on? You're not too popular in Washington, I'll bet, given the nature of your show and the books that you write. I said, no, neither party likes me very much because I said, have you ever been in New York City when they used to have those illegal gambling scenes in the street, two card Monte. They said yes. Or when the guy had shells on a table, two, three shells, and they said they would shuffle them around to look for the nut. The pilot said yes. I said, well, in the case of the Democrats and the Republicans, there's no pee under the shell. They laughed. Both of them smiled. And then they said, well, what do you think is going on? I said, what's going on is there is a desire, a design to destroy the United States of America as a republic. They both shook their head. These are real men who fly airplanes. These are not idiots who teach at Harvard. These are not morons who write for a San Francisco newspaper. These are not social workers in New York's Upper East Side. These are men who fly airplanes. They believe every word of it. They see it with their own eyes. How do you explain that jobs are being sent overseas as I speak? That with all the outcry, with all the hue and cry from people, don't outsource, keep the jobs here, we're broke, we don't have a job. The vermin who run the major multinational corporations who own the president, own the presidency, own the Congress, are saying, you know what, screw you, we have absolute power. And we'll abuse our power. You can't do a damn thing about it. And so we'll continue to outsource until there's nothing left here, till the country is hollowed out like Portugal. You want to hear something else about Portugal? We know what a basket case Portugal is, right? When I, yours truly, began in radio in 1994, I was on a local station. So I created a great stir because of my insights and the strength of my convictions and my ability to translate them into common words that the average person can understand. And they all were shocked by it. So the local newspaper quoted me and laughed at me, the Contra Costa Times over here in the Bay Area. I'll never forget it. They said, Michael Savage said that one day America will be like Portugal, that we won't disappear from the globe, but just as Portugal was once a dominant world power, we will eventually lose our power on Earth and will be nothing but a shell of our former self. They laughed at me when I said we'd be like Portugal. Well, last Monday, Standard & Poor's threatened to downgrade the United States of America economically because of the moron who's running the country. This thin fool, this college teacher, this idiot and his surrounded minions of college boys who don't get it yet. Russia has a healthier economy than we do. Russia has a healthier economy than America. Would you have ever believed that this day would come? That we would be envious of Russia? That we'd have a man like this, a fraud in the White House like this, and nobody can seem to say the king has no clothes, and if they do, they're called every name under the sun? Well, I'd like to talk about power today. Lord Acton was a Britisher who wrote the following. He said, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I would say that right now we have the most abusive presidency in American history. He is a liar through and through. I stand by those words. He said we'd have a transparent administration. We have the most clouded administration. He said he would cut the spending. He increased the spending. He said he wouldn't raise taxes. He wants to raise taxes. The man is a liar through and through. And the only reason he gets away with it is because he's the first black president. And so they let him get away with it for fear of being called names. I'm sick of it. This man is a liar and an incompetent, and he's destroying the country. And I'm just warming up. So now play rock and roll, and I'll be back. Don't give me a break yet. I want to get something. Go ahead. Go play some rock and roll for me. Go ahead. Hit anything already. Hit it already. Hit it.
I was born in a welfare state, ruled by bureaucracy, controlled by civil servants and people dressed in gray. Got no privacy.
On a break.
Got no liberty.
Comes Holy Week, the triumph of Palm Sunday, the humility of Jesus washing the disciples' feet, his slow march up that hill, and the pain and the scorn and the shame of the cross. And we're reminded that in that moment he took on the sins of the world, past, present, and future, and he extended to us that unfathomable gift of grace and salvation through his death and resurrection.
Very stirring. That'll be, I think that's memorable. I think the atheists will like that interpretation very much. Now, the president says he's a practicing Christian, and I would say that for a man with two Muslim fathers, he's practicing and being a Christian quite well. Symbol shift. Okay, now we're getting the timing down. It's taken us a while. But this is not a laughing matter. People don't know whether he's totally incompetent or a Trojan horse. Let's put it to you that way. Let's level with each other. Okay, let's cut it out already. No one knows whether he's a Trojan horse or a total boob. Let's put it to you that way. Now, what do you mean by total incompetent? What do you mean by that? Let me ask you something. You got Gaddafi, a certifiably evil man who they can't topple, and the U.S. says they're going to send $25 million in aid today to the so-called rebels again, even though there's known to be at least 1,000 practicing al-Qaeda members amongst them. So we're now funding the enemy? Is it the first time? Well, we funded the Palestinians. It started with Bill Clinton giving them machine guns, remember? What did they do with the machine guns? They turned them on the Jews. What happened in Nigeria yesterday? There was an election. There was democracy. A Christian won. And what did the practitioners of the religion of peace do? They went on they went crazy with machetes. They killed Christians. There are corpses all over Nigeria right now. Not one word about radical Islam. The Palestinians, so-called, kill Jews, and you don't say one word about the word Muslim. Decent practicing Muslims are castrated or beheaded by some kind of shadowy force in Iraq, and again, they don't say Islamo-fascist. They use every other word. The vermin in the media don't use any other word. They won't use reality. They won't say the word Islamo-fascist. Those lying bastards in the media like Anderson Cooper, I have nothing but contempt for him. You know, why I pick on him is simple, because he's so smug. The man was one of the chief proponents for the overthrow of Mubarak, and now Egypt's falling into Iran's camp. He should be tried for crimes against humanity.
This magnificent grace, this expansive grace, this amazing grace calls me to reflect, and it calls me to pray. It calls me to ask God for forgiveness for the times that I've not shown grace to others, those times that I've fallen short. It calls me to praise God for the gift of our Son, His Son, and our Savior.
You meant your Son, okay, because you are God. Okay, see, there's a slip of the tongue where the narcissism shows. It calls me to praise God for the gift of our Son, meaning he and Michelle gave birth to Jesus. I mean, it was a Freudian slip. He quickly said, meaning his Son, because he's the center of the universe. Since the skids have been greased for him from the beginning of time, everyone was afraid to say one word for fear they'd be called racist. Racist. So affirmative action pushed him into Harvard. Affirmative action pushed him onto the Harvard Law Review. Now, why do I say that? Because I believe it's true. And I believe the only way to prove that I am false, prove what I say is false, is for him to release his records at Harvard and to release the publications that were the writings that he published while at Harvard. They're all sealed. Why would a president be so secretive? How many times do I have to say the same thing? Put aside the birth certificate for a minute. I'm not going to go there. Donald Trump is doing a good job on that one. I'm going to go somewhere else. I'll lay out another strategy. Do you realize that because of his associations with Bill Ayers and other known terrorists and other communists and subversives, he could not have qualified to become an FBI agent? He would have failed the first test. They would have asked him to leave. Thank you very much. Take a walk. We'll see you tomorrow. I don't know that he could have been a prison guard. I really don't know whether he could have qualified to be a prison guard. I don't know what the rules are, but I know he couldn't be an FBI agent. Couldn't have been a Secret Service agent. He couldn't have qualified to guard himself. How stupid can a people be? I keep asking myself, and you know the answer comes to me every day. Wherever I go, I see the answer. You go to a mall, you go to a restaurant, you turn a television set on, there's your answer. Take a look, there's your answer. Bring more of them in, bring more of them in, bring them in. Bring in more from the Middle East, bring in more. Bring in more, 16 children all on welfare. Okay? Bring them all in. And then say a word, you'll be called a racist. It's astounding. Just a shocker what's going on. How Napolitano holds on to her job is beyond comprehension. Here is a woman who defends a six-year-old's, fundamentally a statutory rape of a six-year-old. Here is Napolitano, who should have been fired after the three terrorist events that were stopped by individuals or by accident, even though they happened right under her nose. Now this, well, I'm going to get angry, and I promised myself I wouldn't. I really don't want to. I can't get angry because it makes no difference if I get angry. Doesn't matter. The world doesn't change. Now, Charles, get clip 7 ready. Don't play it yet. You're going to bring it in after I do the introduction, okay? Here's how it's going to go. She goes on to this stooge show on MSNBC, funded by NBC, which is funded by General Electric, which does business because it's a wholly owned subsidiary of the White House. Or shall I say the White House, to me, appears to be a wholly owned subsidiary of General Electric. And the network that they own for the government media complex to put out the Pravda or the Izvestia, in other words, the big lie over and over again, is this little channel, More Snotty Nonsense by Chicks. And whenever a government agent wants to put across the big lie, the propaganda, they go on MSNBC primarily, where they know it's going to be a friendly interview where no one will ask him a question. So Napolitano is asked to come on and to talk about the pat-down of a six-year-old where I watched the video, this little girl, it was statutory rape. And instead of saying we're going to fire the agent, I'm going to play it in a minute. Instead of saying we're going to fire the agent, look, here's how it happened. We're coming back from the Lanes, and I heard about this thing with the kid, you know, at the airport, and it was a mess. It was a real PR mess. But, you know, I'm pretty good at spinning. I got to tell you, the girls tell me I'm pretty good at it. I mean, I'm not a 300, you know. I don't do a 3. I'm a good 220, an average 2.25 on the Lanes. I'm pretty good at turning things around. So I figure, you know what? I don't need a flack for me. Because look what I've got. So I'm going to go on that show myself. So here's what I said.
Nobody likes right. to see this little girl being patted down, although it was done in a professional way, we should say. But still, how much do you think about and talk about balancing freedom with security?
Well, nobody likes to see those kinds of things, and we join in that, even though it was done professionally and according to the protocols. But what TSA is doing is reexamining.
Turn her off. This is a monster. And the man who just said that should be fired. Repeating the government lie, even though it was done professionally, you rat, you bum, you lowlife, you rat, you. If you were a real man and had children, they did that to your daughter, you'd say it was done professionally. Statutory rape by a TSA agent is your idea professionally, you stupid idiot, you. How much can a country take? How much more can we take in this gang? I don't think we can take much more. Something's going to set off the spark in this. You've seen nothing in this country yet. It ain't going to be me. I'm only at talk shows. Somebody's going to say will be heard around the world. And what you've seen happen, you have had enough of this gang. Incompetent criminals from top to bottom. A six-year-old is subjected to statutory rape by a pervert at the airport wearing a TSA badge with someone with a gun standing by. And her nice parents can't do a thing. And when they say one word, they're threatened with the eyes of a TSA goon. And here comes Big Sis. You know, well, it was done professionally, but we're investigating. Why aren't you being investigated? The buck stops here. This is far worse than an air traffic controller falling asleep at the switch. Believe me, it's far worse than that. This is statutory rape, my friend. And if a woman did that to a little girl at a mall while the mother turned her head, that person would go to jail for 30 years. But what, because they wear a badge, they're allowed to do it to little children? I've never seen anything like this. But the average guy, you look at him. Look at the schmucks walking around. Look, Easter week, take a look at the men in this country. Take a look. Take a look at the average American, the big gut walking around, the schmucks on the, 6 different pills, one for depression, one for anxiety, one for cholesterol. God knows, that's 3. I don't know what else they put him on. The man doesn't know where his feet are or his hands are. He's got the wife, he's dragging the children, he's got an ice cream cone in his mouth. Or the schmuck goes to Disneyland for the Easter week. He stands there on a Valium because he's about to commit suicide, doesn't know what to do with himself. That's the manhood. So if you were a throwback If you were an Islamo-fascist living in a cave somewhere or in Brooklyn, it wouldn't matter whether it's a cave or in Brooklyn, and you're a sleeper sent over here to watch the fall of a great republic, would you fear the average American male? You know that there's a couple of million guys armed to the teeth who are dangerous, but they have no power. The average schmuck is of no interest to you. Now, there's another element to this that's been bothering me. I've been thinking about why we're in this state and how we got here and all of that. And there's a number of reasons, you know, you can write a myriad of answers to that question. I could write three novels on why and how and who did it. And I know who the villains are, at least I think we do, and they're pretty public. I mean, there's no mystery anymore who the villains are, okay? And we know what entities are the villain, are villainous. But I thought about something else. It's psychological in a certain way. It's a psychological problem. Here we are living in a technological world or a world that is based upon the computer screen. And so most Americans, I don't know to what percentile, live in a false world of the computer, where what's seen in print becomes reality, while reality itself is no longer important or even real. And so compare that now with the throwbacks. Compare that with a 14th century throwback with a big bushy beard who comes into a country knowingly hating it. He's allowed to bring in a wife who's covered from head to toe and a number of children and goes on welfare and they pay for the house and they pay for the house. The guy says, hey, if they're this stupid, I'll tell my brother Ahmed to come on over or Muhammad can come in too. Coming in, the water's fine. Now, how come they can do it? Because they live in the real world, whether you know or not. Admittedly, it's a world 500 years old, but they live in the real world of 500 years ago. We don't even live in the real world of today. We're not even living in the real world of today, most of us. Think about what I'm saying to you. Most of the leaders in this country under this faker are young guys who grew up on the computer. There are very few men who grew up in the pre-computer age working for the faker. And these men are all digital. These are digital men facing ancient men. And ancient doesn't mean good. And digital doesn't mean bad. It means the digital men are naive and out of touch with reality. And it means the ancient men are the opposite of naive and very much in touch with reality. And I don't have the answer for you. There's no and therefore do this. There's no and therefore do that. There's no and therefore do anything. You understand that? But then you have villains, absolute villains who know this. They're so wise and so smart and so evil that they will bring down the greatest republic the world has ever seen for their own gain. They will destroy the currency first. It's really not the first thing they did. First, they doped the nation. They drugged the nation. First, it was marijuana. It was told to be, it was said to be a natural herb. The most dangerous drug man has ever used is marijuana. And the reason I say that is because it's a gateway drug. It's an entry-level drug. And once you dope them up on that, anything is possible. They go on to every other drug after that. If they're going to go on to them, they go through marijuana, not around it. That's number two. Don't call me up, you dope heads. I don't want to hear from one pothead today about how great you're doing. I don't care what you say. You're a dope head. You're stupid. Your mind is fogged. That's why it's called doped. George Soros. Back in the 90s, I remember with the Open Something Foundation was funding the legalization of marijuana in Arizona and in California. I had a big argument with one of his stooges. I never forget it to this day. I knew then and there what he was doing. In my mind, George Soros was like the English empire that had doped up China prior to the takeover of China when they put opium into China and they doped up most of the nation. They made the nation helpless. They addicted them to opium. You know, may not know the whole story, but the English doped up all of China with opium. The English brought opium into China, and fortunes were made. And, of course, some American families that you hold up as in high esteem, such as Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I'm one of the few people who know anything about history in the radio business. The middle name is Delano, right? FDR, the great social engineer. FDR, what a great man. Obama's hero. Hillary Clinton's hero. Well, the middle name Delano descends from the grandfather on the maternal side, who was fundamentally a drug dealer. His grandfather, Delano Roosevelt's great grandfather, ran the ships out of New England that brought the opium into China for the English. Did you know that? He was a transporter of hard drugs to dope up all of China. That's how the family fortune was made. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Now, how did China break free of this grip? How did they break free of the opium? Boxer Rebellion. Boxer Rebellion, early 1900s. A group of young Turks saw that their nation was victimized by the English. So they kicked the English out. That's a very simple statement. It didn't happen overnight. There was a revolution in China. They threw the dope dealers out of China. And only after the Chinese were freed for 50 years were they able to think. I'll continue my insights in a moment on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
In the middle of these critical national debates, in the middle of our busy lives, we must always make sure that we are keeping things in perspective. Children help do that.
Got it.
A strong spouse helps do that. But nothing beats Scripture and the reminder of the eternal.
Islam has always been a part of American history. And every day, American Muslims are helping to write our story.
How is this possible? How is this possible? How is this possible that we're living through this reign of terror? It's like the French Revolution without the guillotine. We have the same mentality that caused the French Revolution running this country. We have the Robespierre. I can give you all the characters and the translation of who the character is today. We have Madame Defarge. We have Robespierre. Those of you who even read it, you don't even read it anymore. Do you read it? They teach it in school, or they only teach you Jenny has two daddies? Yeah, the Reign of Terror, French Revolution. But we have all of the characters. They're just the guillotines are not yet. They haven't yet got the order in from China. They're still making the steel. 1-800-449-8255. Sam in Portland, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, thank you very much for such an incisive talk about Chinese history, about the opiate addiction in China in 19th century.
Yes.
And admire your breadth and depth of your knowledge. I was all Chinese and naturalized American. And live America, I think America every day.
Yes.
And the history about this Chinese downfall was in 1820.
Yes.
English occupy India and make the cultivation of opiate in the expectation of export to China unlimited quantity.
Yes. Yes.
And Chinese was defeated in 1840 in opium war and had to give up Hong Kong. It took 150 years and 90 million deaths before the success of Chinese Revolution in 1950.
Well, the problem is, yes, but the Boxer Rebellion occurred, I think, in 1908. Am I correct? I think it was around 1908.
It was the initiation, have a real successful resistance and overcome the difficulties started in 1900, Boxer Rebellion.
I think I may be the only American in the media who knows this story, and I do appreciate your listening. In fact, I'm honored that a man of your intelligence is a listener to the show, because sometimes I get distracted and I joke around or I just go off the deep end with jokes. But the truth of it is, we're going through a very similar period here in America. Don't you agree?
I think so. It is a self-administered injury, repeatedly. It's self-delusion and self-destruction.
You mean in America, because of the drug use, the people are living in a delusion and self-destruction, right?
The drug culture.
Yes.
Do your own thing.
Do your own thing. Live for yourself. Don't live for the country. The country means nothing. Live only for yourself. And look what we have now in the White House as a result. Take a look.
It's the second generation, and if we do not turn around, this country will be in great danger. It will be repetition of Rome and Greek.
Well, Sam, I agree with you 1,000%. Can I send you a copy of my brilliant book, Trickle Up Poverty?
Oh, thank you very much.
I will send you. I've always respected Chinese history. I'm a student of Chinese history in English translation. Unfortunately, I don't read any of the Chinese languages. But I've read much of Chinese literature for a very long period of time, for at least 30 years. People don't know it's a hobby of mine. And I'm amazed at the Chinese culture, not only in the material arts, but of course in the written word as well. Sam, thank you for calling. People don't know that. You can't tell everybody about yourself. When you sound like a longshoreman like I do, people think, oh, uneducated, you know, knuckle dragger. And he's not a progressive. Only progressives are advanced. Oh, only the drug-using, sexo-progressive, they're the elite ones, you know? Oh, yeah. Oh, anyone, unless you work for a radical newspaper or a radical channel, where you always point out any offense against the black or a homosexual or against Muslims, you're not a good person. You have to believe in the nanny state, taking from the middle class to fund the infantilized poor. Oh, yeah, then you're an elite, advanced, progressive. And, of course, if you pimp out your wife at a party, you're an even more progressive progressive. And if your children wind up in rehab, it shows how progressive you really are. It shows you how very progressive you are. Because, after all, you're an intellectual. And what intellectual doesn't, use his wife at a sex party? I mean, and that's the mark of a progressive. And, of course, we read. I mean, progressives read Nietzsche. Just say Nietzsche to each other over a glass of white wine after having a J. And throw in the word Freud. Well, not Freud anymore, but you could throw in Nietzsche a lot, and you could say Marx if you want to. And then you'll have all the answers to everything. Oh, yeah. And laugh at the Christians. Call them throwbacks. Mock the Christians. Go to the head of the class in the Upper East Side of Manhattan. Yeah, that's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. Don't believe in any of those who believe in Jesus. Just believe in Obama, who mocks Jesus by saying he believes in Jesus. That's all. He's a naked Marxist pretending to love Jesus all of a sudden. For 2 years, there was no Jesus in the White House. Now Jesus is there in a white cloak. All of a sudden, he discovered Jesus. Like half the guys who go to jail.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I wanted to host this breakfast for a simple reason, because as busy as we are, as many tasks as pile up, during this season, we are reminded that there's something about the resurrection.
Run Hillary Clinton right after it.
The resurrection of our Savior Jesus Christ that puts everything else in perspective. In the middle of
Islam has always been a part of American history, and every day American Muslims are helping to write our story.
So now you have the good cop and the bad cop being played by Obama and Hillary. And suddenly Obama has discovered Jesus because it's election season. And now suddenly, as many people find when they go to jail, they go in an atheist, but they know that they get off time for good behavior if they read the Bible. And the minute they get out of jail, they throw the Bible in the river or the lake. And so now, in order to stay in the White House, which he allegedly hates. He said he misses the freedom of getting up on a Sunday morning and not shaving and going to the mall with his kids. Yeah, I really believe that. What a stress it is flying around in Air Force One. Oh, you don't ask. To have to put the old lady on a Mia 737 to go on a Yenta show on television, it's a real stress. You know, to host the world's the leaders, oh, what a terrible strain it is. Oh, what I wouldn't give for anonymity. But since he hates it so much, he wants to win again. And in order to win again, he suddenly realizes that most of America believe in Jesus. And so suddenly he believes in Jesus. That's until he gets reelected, which is going to happen. Mark it down. I know you don't want to hear this. Your heart will break. I know most of you don't want to hear it. But I'm telling you what I see coming. You talk about two-card Monty. I see five-card Monty being played. There are several Trojan horses running already on the Republican side. And all of them are set up to lose because the way the game is played, boys and girls, it's 8 years Dems, then 8 years Repubs, then 8 years Dems. See, you had Clinton for eight, then you had George Bush for eight. You have Obama for two, another two coming, and then another quattro. Okay? I don't want to start speaking in quatrains, but believe me, I can see what's coming already. It don't matter what he spends, $1 billion. What's $1 billion for George Soros? So he'll break the English pound again. He's already broken the dollar. Should be illegal, shouldn't it, to gamble against the U.S. currency and destroy it? See, George Soros is the Rothschild of our time. You say, well, that's good, isn't it? No, it's not good. The original Lord Rothschild said, give me control of a nation's currency and I'll control that nation. I don't have to be elected. He has more power than a king if you control the currency. So George Soros almost broke the English pound, made $1 billion on that bet. Broke the Malaysian dinar, the Malaysian currency, made, I don't know what, hundreds of millions on that one. Spread anti-Semitism through the Muslim world in my analysis. And now I'm pretty sure he's out to destroy the U.S. dollar. He's taken a short position on the U.S. dollar, and he's every day hammering destroying the dollar at place. The dollar is no longer the currency. Make the Chinese yuan the currency. Make anything but the U.S. dollar the currency. So what is that man? Is that man a friend of America? A man who says that over and over again. Is he a friend of America? No, he isn't a friend of America. He's an enemy of America, in my estimation. But, hey, I'm only a talk show host. I only have a PhD, two master's degrees. I've only written 28 books. I've rescued and saved rainforests. What do I know? Trust your people on MSNBC. They know everything. Just got an email from my friend Peter Chowka. He says, trenchant and chilling analysis this half hour. You're on a huge roll. Hope you don't stop. Flying cross country is often an inspiration to higher thinking, isn't it? I like the 45,000 feet is closer to God point you made in the last half hour. Thanks, Peter. That's right. Thank you very much. So here we are. Here we are. 6.5 hours at 40,000 feet. 6 hours at 40,000. Coming in, they dropped 10,000 feet because the controller turned off the porno and realized that he kept them up too high too long. All right, drop 10,000 feet. We got you on a fly on a path. Come on down 10,000 feet. Blow out the ears of your passenger. See if I care. I just got turned off the porno machine. They're going to have an inspection any minute now, like Stalag 17. We just got finished the pizza and the porno. Now it's time to land a few airplanes in between it. It's like a banana republic wherever I turn. Drugs, sex, maniacs everywhere. Men walking around looking like they're children. Grown men. It's not that there's anything wrong with them. They're not morally deficient. They've just... The average person basically is a good person. The average person wants to raise a family or not raise a family, just be left alone. Doesn't want to bother anybody. In other words, he wants to live for his own impulses. In other words, he wants to live like a dog. See, that's the ultimate goal of Western civilization, is to teach you to be an animal. If it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? Never think about the betterment of your family, the betterment of your community, the betterment of your society, the betterment of your nation, the betterment of the world. Think only about what feels good. If it feels good, do it. Feels good, do it. Started in the 60s, remember? Remember the 60s, all the degenerate perverts? If it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? Well, here we are now. Fast forward, we have narcissist in chief in the White House. If it feels good, do it. So it feels good to be president. It's nice to be king, so he wants to do it again while telling you he hates it, that he misses being anonymous. I myself would hate the life of a politician. I couldn't do it. Personally, not me. I actually mean what I say to you. I don't even give speeches because I don't like to go on the road. I mean, you know, there are guys in this business who are on the road all the time raking in the money. The holy rollers. I don't know what they're doing with the money. I have no idea why they need the money. I don't know why they like to go to audiences. I don't know what they get out of it. It's all ego. I mean, all is vanity at a certain point. How much money do you need and how much adulation do you need? Is what I say to myself. But then again, it's me. Everyone has their own way of looking at life. Maybe it's a game and to see who has the more at the end wins. I don't know, whatever it is. But the bottom line is here, if you live for yourself, as you've been taught to do in America, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? What you wind up with is a narcissist in the White House who lives for himself and pretends that he lives for the country when he doesn't. except when it rolls around election time, he suddenly puts on the mantle of sanctimony, and there we go again. So what am I saying? We should be collectivists? Am I arguing we should become socialists, communists, and live for the nation? I didn't say that. Is there not a balance point where you could live for yourself and live for the community and the country? Is there not such a balance point where you can enjoy your life to a certain extent and give something to the country and worry about the country and worry about the currency and worry about the enemy within and worry about the incompetence and the outright traitors who walk through the halls of Congress whispering their tales of deceit in the parlance of America? Is there no such person like me? You mean I'm the only person in America who thinks this way? It can't be. I can't be alone. I cannot be alone. I cannot be the only person who thinks this way. No matter how I may be debased, no matter how the vermin in the media may debase me or ignore me or try to make me into what I am not, although the entire government of England was in cahoots with the United States of America and made me out to be a certifiably bad guy, a villain, and put me in a list of murderers and terrorists, and virtually nobody came to my aid. Nobody. I'm still twisting in the wind. I will not yet give up on my country, and I will not give up on freedom, and I will not give up on the tenets of our civilization. I will not do so. I just won't do so. 1-800-449-8255. Would you please do me a favor? Don't buy it. Would you go to Amazon.com and look at Abuse of Power? The book's not out till September, so it's very, I shouldn't have done this. I know I wasn't supposed to. But I'm so thrilled with this thriller that I had to put it up there. From the New York Times best-selling author and controversial radio talk. Why am I controversial? What do you mean controversial? Al Sharpton's not controversial, but I am. Louis Farrakhan, they talk about the Reverend Farrakhan. They don't call him a controversial whatever minister. I'm controversial. That's like putting a stigma on me. Comes a high-intensity debut thriller. Now I'm a debutante. The story of a disgraced network journalist who uncovers a chilling terrorist plot. My hero is Jack Hatfield as a heart. Shall I read this to you? Yes. Jack Hatfield is a hardened former war correspondent. See, it's fiction. I was not a war correspondent. Who rose to national prominence for his insightful, provocative commentary. But after being smeared as a bigot and extremist by a radical media watchdog group, now let me put it in parentheses, loosely based upon someone you may know whose name begins in S and ends in S, he ultimately loses his job and finds himself working in obscurity as a freelance news producer in San Francisco. Hatfield is on a ride along with the SFPD bomb squad when a seemingly routine carjacking turns deadly after police find several pounds of military-grade explosives in the jacked car. And when the FBI urges Hatfield to stay out of it, he knows he's onto something big. This event will open up a shadowy trail that leads Hatfield to Tel Aviv, London, Paris, and back again to the United States, where he works with a beautiful and seductive Yemeni intelligence agent and a veteran Green Beret to expose a terrorist group known as the Hand of Allah and a plot within the highest corridors of power that will make 9/11 look like child's play. In this lightning-paced first thriller by Michael Savage spanning the globe from Europe and Israel to the back alleys of San Francisco's Chinatown, a reporter must make the choice between protecting his own life and investigating a terrorist cell whose goal is nothing less than total political control, no matter what the cost. I can't wait to see the movie version. I cannot wait to see my dog Teddy playing Eddie. 1-800-449-8255. Sacramento, California. Raymond, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Dr. Savage. You really reminded me of a Chinese character, actually a historical character, Confucius. He was also...
Confucius spoke in epigrams, did he not?
Hmm?
He spoke in epigrams.
Yes.
Okay, no, let me go on. I'll give you my... So please continue. I'll let you speak, and then I'll interact with you afterwards. Go ahead, please.
All right. When he developed his political idea, he was also despised by the royalty. And in fact, he was kicked out by his home country.
I didn't know that about Confucius. I really didn't. I thought Confucius wrote all the Chinese fortune cookies I've been enjoying all these years. I didn't know he was real. I'm joking. I'm pulling your leg.
Okay, it's okay. Well, and in so many areas, when I'm listening to you, I feel like I'm listening to him in a way, because he also talk about politics. He also talk about bird and a tree and everyday life.
Isn't that beautiful? I really never saw the comparison, the parallels between myself and Confucius. Sometimes I think I remind people of Mr. Confusion, but not Confucius. So, you know, one thing I love about the Chinese language and people I know, Chinese-American friends, is that the intelligence of people is marked by the play on words. Chinese love to play words, don't they? And don't they love wordplay in the Chinese language?
Oh, yes.
Yes, Chinese play with words and enjoy doing that. And it's a mark of intelligence. The more you can turn words and play with them, the more intelligent and delightful you are to your companion who you're speaking with. It's a lost art. It's not done in America very much, Raymond. It really isn't.
Yes, sir.
Raymond, I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty because you'll enjoy it. That's all. See, I'm having a good time today. I haven't yet blown a fuse yet. Look what we've talked about. Obama says he's a practicing Christian, and I would say, and I said before, and I would say for a man with two Muslim fathers, he's practicing and being a Christian quite well. That's quite Confucian. Janet Napolitano, our distinguished chairman of the Department of Homeland and Security, goes on to the station, the government media complex station of MSNBC, and the little prostitute man on the show says, "We know it was done professionally, the way she was frisked and raped. She was a statutory rape, we know that. But what do you think about that?" And then Napolitano comes in and she says, "Well, it was done professionally, but we're looking into it, you know? All right, I'll be back."
Savage.
What color are we on right now? What is it?
Airports are orange. Everybody else
mauve,
is yellow.
Yellow, orange. You can change that, right? Because it's so confusing for people like Willie and me. You got to keep it simple. So how are you going to simplify it so Willie and I know whether we can go out to eat or whether we have to duck and cover?
Nobody likes to see this little girl being patted down, although it was done in a professional way, we should say. But still, how much do you think about and talk about balancing freedom with security?
Well, nobody likes to see those kinds of things, and we join in that, even though it was done professionally and according to the protocols. But
even though the child was raped statutorily, we don't like to see it, and we won't punish the demon who did it, because we have absolute power. And since we have absolute power, we won't punish the agent who committed statutory rape, in my opinion, because we have the power to say she didn't commit statutory rape, and what I say goes. Doesn't matter what you see. Who are you going to believe, me or your, what really happened? And since I'm Janet Napolitano, I want to have absolute power now, you know, huge budget, millions of computers, armed agents everywhere. People are scared to death of me now. I'm the top bull in the house here. We'll say it was done professionally and let it go at that. And the schmucks will go along with it, you know. Any other questions over there on MSNBC right now? I got a busy schedule coming up. Oh, my God. What nation would tolerate this? Then we have the first lady flies to New York on a 737 in order to go on to a demented television show. How in the world can a first lady abuse power like this? Listen to clip 19 now.
You know, there was much fanfare about Bo, and he
yeah,
is
he's
so
the
cute.
Most popular Obama.
Oh, I don't
he
know
wins.
About that.
Yeah.
But I know that he's a big guy. Whose dog is Bo?
He's my dog.
Is he so do the girls have, I used to call it pooty duty at my house, where you had to go and pick up the poop. Do they have pooty duty?
No, they don't have it. Michelle now has Air Force generals doing it. Instead of manning B-50 to B-1 bombers, they're now picking up dog crap. Because that's the way the military should be treated under the Obamas. They walk around with pooper scoopers picking up crap. They take the biggest four-star general they can get it from the Marines, from the Air Force, and they rotate duty. And one calls the other, "Hey, Bob, you got the poo duty tonight, right?" "Yeah, Ralph, I got it." "How come you're doing it?" "Because I'm a sad schmuck like you are, because I'm afraid of getting fired. So yeah, I'll pick up the dog crap." "Yeah, I have no pride at the end of the day. I need my pension just like you do, Bob. And I'm not flying those B-1s anymore. They've been mothballed, for Ralph." Any other questions?
Savage.
Actually, Bo goes in a private plane. place. He's really good about
trained.
That. There's this ivy that he goes in, and it's sort of his spot, so we really don't have to poop scoop anymore. Fourth grade basketball.
She's a great little athlete.
Oh,
they both
she's
are.
Terrific.
Sasha, yeah, but
and
they're on the same team. I didn't realize.
They're
so here's the president of the United States actually coaching the team.
Yeah, he was an assistant coach.
Can you believe this is what America has leading the country, that this is a first lady talking about dog crap on a television show? I mean, what has to happen for you to realize that they have debased the presidency and the White House? What must happen? I guess nothing will wake you up. 10 staffers, senators, 10 senators, U.S. senators, plus their wives and their staffers and military escorts, on Monday went to China. Senate will not release any information about the trip. Not one bite of information. Not one bit of information is coming back from our democracy, from the leaders of our democracy. The trip is called a senior Senate delegation because in addition to Harry Reid, you know how honorable he is, here are the other individuals who are on this trip. Dick Durbin, Turban Durbin. He's never met an Islamo-fascist he didn't like. Barbara Boxer, who has never met a scandal that she wasn't involved in my opinion. Chuck Schumer, one of the lowest louts in the history of Brooklyn. Frank Lautenberg, whose name speaks volumes, and others. No one knows what the delegation is doing in China. Nobody knows what they're talking about. Nobody knows what they are doing there. But even the Washington Post, the liberal bastion, says when we try to get more details on the itinerary, we were told no more could be disclosed because of security concerns. Now, this is incomprehensible that the media has become so compliant or subservient or such that lawmakers, senators, allow to go to China without disclosing what they're doing there. There's no security threat in China. How could China be dangerous for American senators? What do you mean security concerns? That's total rubbish. Absolutely no security concerns whatsoever. Yet these liars are able to get away with this. How is it possible that Harry Reid, Dick Durbin, Barbara Boxer, Chuck Schumer, and Frank Lautenberg and others are allowed to travel to China and not disclose what they're doing there? How is it possible? The answer is because we are no longer a participatory democracy. It's not going to happen. They're not public servants at all. The government is now an entity unto itself. It's a nation unto itself. We have at least two nations, a nation of public servants, which, of course, they're not the servants. It's a reversal of language. We have a nation of public bureaucrats and taxpaying servants. So when you hear the word public servant, it's from another time. What you really want to hear are the words mandarins, and the correct word for the bureaucracy that we have under Obama, that he didn't create, but of course he expanded it, is the word mandarins, to keep using the analogy of China, because we can learn much from history if we know any of it. Otherwise, we will repeat what Santana said, those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it, since most of us are ignorant of history. They don't even teach history anymore. They teach herstory. Most colleges now are so politically warped, they don't teach history. They teach herstory. That's right. The radical feminist lunatics eliminated the word history because it was too male. They changed it to herstory, her story. And her story is all about oppression and woe is me and men are bad. So since we don't learn any history and we only know herstory, therefore we are capable of nothing. And we are a nation that shall live in infamy. So here we are. So we don't have any public servants. We have a ruling class of mandarins who live in a shroud. Everything to do is shrouded in secrecy and side deals. And then we have the private citizen who is, in essence, the true servant. The true servant now is us. We pay the taxes for these bums to live large. What are they doing in China? What is Dick Durbin, Harry Reid, Barbara Boxer? Boxer can't be looking for a lawsuit for a family, can she? They don't sue in China. They don't have any tort law in China, do they? Thank God they don't. That's why they're successful. They don't have an EEOC telling them they can't build a bridge or a building. They don't have people crippling them and hobbling them like Lilliputians at every turn. So the country grew so fast as a result of all of this. And we, of course, have diminished as a result of the EEOC and all of the crippling laws that the psychopathic liberals have jammed down our throats. Before a contractor can lift up a hammer, he has to go kowtow to the bureaucrats in the town hall and beg them if he can build a one-story, three-bedroom, two-bath cracker box in a suburban town and go through 3 years of bureaucratic red tape so the mandarins can frisk him and risk him. Evaluate the risk so they can frisk. What would you like to talk about? Anything? There's so much good sound. There's so many good stories out there. I can ask you what you think they're doing in China, but what's the good of joking about it? We have no idea what they're doing in China. Nothing whatsoever. What are they doing there? What are they doing there? Nah, no answer. How did they get away with it? Who's going to stop them? When you have a man like Obama in the White House, the senators can go to China and say, we don't know, we don't have to tell you anything. Nothing whatsoever. We're going to China. I don't know, maybe they're looking for a retirement job to go to work for the People's Liberation Army. That would be a good job for Dick Durbin. Maybe he's trying to get a higher bidder than Libya. Maybe he can get a higher payday. I mean, after all, look at Sandy Berger. Look at the good job he got after he got caught with state secrets in his underwear. Look how well he's doing, right? I mean, look how well they do. It's very good. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. So 1 year's worth of union dues could support 265,000 U.S. workers for a year. This is an article from by Labor Union Report. Union bosses have been engaging in class warfare for so long now that it's become standard for the media to echo the line without challenge. An example of such mainstream Marxism is in today's Bloomberg piece entitled "Runaway CEO Pay Could Support 102,000 U.S. Jobs," AFL-CIO says. Now, that relies heavily on AFL-CIO's executive pay watch. The fact of the matter is, the reverse is true. Because if you analyzed how much money is spent on union dues, that union dues, which goes strictly to the guys on top, could support 265,000 U.S. workers for a year. Just calculate it. You see, it could be turned the other way. Libya rebels will receive $25 million from Hillary Clinton. That's even though there are at least 1,000 Al-Qaeda members amongst them. That's your government at work. Brutal Mexican drug gang crosses into the United States, butchering people, beheading them, torturing them and beheading them. They're now ranging all over the United States, and we're told that we're racist for saying close the borders. Thank you, Janet Napolitano, for doing such a good job. Former SEIU official appointed by Obama to investigate union corruption. First thing this official did was cut the number of investigators. That shows you how wonderful this administration is. A former SEIU union employee, one of the worst of the worst, and a former director of the University of Wisconsin School for Workers, which is a communist front group in my opinion, okay, has been hired by the imposter to investigate union corruption. And the first thing this individual did was cut the number of investigators. And you'd vote for this crumb? Supreme Court to hear major climate change case. I don't even want to get into this. It's incomprehensible. There's so many other stories. I'll cover them all. They're all on michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Las Vegas where Ken awaits us. Ken, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Michael, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I believe Reed's over there to put a deal together with the Chinese for the bullet train that they've been fighting over here. A couple of different companies want to back it.
Well, what do you mean? They want a bullet train from Las Vegas to where?
Well, the big controversy is it's going to stop in Victorville. And they don't want it to stop in Victorville. They want it to go right to Anaheim, into Disneyland. But if they stop in Victorville, they can take it north and go up to Northern California. So, you know, he's talking about jobs coming here, but I doubt that Nevadans or Californians are going to get a lot of these jobs.
Well, no, they'll send workers from China to build it because, after all, they work for less.
They'll have their hand in everything. And, you know,
right.
We'll have to bend over backwards again. But I just,
right, American workers be damned. Build a bullet train and not a dollar flows into America from the building of the bullet train.
No jobs for Americans. It's just business deals from the, you know, now they're going to foreign countries.
Well, when you think about it, since we're told the Chinese built the railroads in California, what would be wrong with the Chinese building the railroad now in Nevada? See, it's a sort of a repeat of history.
Right.
they'll say this really, it's very historically correct. Chinese built the railroads in California, so now the Chinese are going to build a railroad in Nevada.
make.
No, it's no laughing matter. I remember when I was a youngster in graduate school in Hawaii in 1968, around the time that Obama was in high school. I don't really know. I didn't know the man at that time. I think I knew some of the communists in Hawaii who must have been involved in cultivating him. I'm pretty sure I can name them if I was forced to. I pretty much know who they were, because there was a big communist presence in Hawaii at the university. And there were some rich people, very wealthy people at the time, who were behind this communist group. And I'm sure that they cultivated Obama. But nevertheless, at that time, in 67, 68, when I was a graduate student, I noticed something happening. The Japanese were making major inroads into Honolulu and Hawaii in general. And they were, big tour groups that come in from Japan. And I noticed that there were tour buses, big monster tour buses from Japan in Honolulu. And I made note of it. I said, why are these buses built in Japan? Why are the drivers from Japan? And why do they only take them to places where the money goes back to Japan? And I said to myself, where's the leadership? And of course, we already saw the handwriting on the wall way back then, Ken. I saw what was going on then. It's only gotten worse. It hasn't gotten any better, has it? No, it has not. No, it has not. Tennessee, Jerry, you're on the Savage Nation, Gone with the Wind. Not on the Savage Nation. Jerry is gone. Texas, Ron, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I just want to, real quick, I guess it's a good thing I wasn't at the airport when the little girl was patted down. I'd probably be incarcerated right now, because I would have intervened, and I don't think it would have been real pretty.
If I saw a TSA agent doing to that little, to my little girl, what she did to that girl, I would have pushed her away from my child, and I would have demanded a citizen's arrest for statutory rape. Am I wrong?
No, you're exactly right. And it just,
that woman committed statutory rape in my estimation, and I've seen the video. And I'd like to know why there's not one voice in Congress demanding that TSA agent be fired and Janet Napolitano be fired as well. How many insults to the American people can this woman get away with? Why is she above the law? Why is Janet Napolitano sacrosanct and above the law? Why? Why?
I'm ticked off that nobody stepped in. I guess God was looking out for me, and I wasn't there that day.
I don't know about God. I just know that the woman who did this, the TSA agent, committed statutory rape by all estimation. There is no justification for putting hands inside the underwear of a 6-year-old girl at an airport. Because I'll tell you something else. If that little girl was wearing a burqa, she would have been whisked right through security. That's how upside down this world has become. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Nobody likes to see this little girl being patted down, although it was done in a professional way, we should say. But
you
still,
lying louse, you.
Think about and talk about balancing freedom with security.
Well, nobody likes to see those kinds of things, and we join in that.
Well, not in public anyway. I mean,
to the protocols. But what TSA is doing is reexamining those protocols all the time.
I would say fire Napolitano. I would say that the agent should be put in jail for statutory rape. I would say that the parents should sue the government for $1 billion for the trauma to the child and the other children in the family. I would say that if I were a lawyer, one of these rat lawyers, I would sue the government for all they're worth. I would also say shut down the Department of Homeland Security. I would say that the FBI does a better job, if it's still capable of doing anything after Obama, we don't know. But I would say, by and large, I particularly have more faith in the FBI than the Department of Homeland Security myself. I mean, I'd like to see J. Edgar Hoover back, but those days are long gone. Bill in Boston, welcome to the Savage Nation.
You want a budget cut, Michael? You want a budget cut? I'll give you a budget cut. TSA agents, the entire Homeland Security, get out of there. You close the borders and you put the National Guard on the borders. You put the National Guard inside the airports if you have to have security. That's all that is. You get rid of the entire...
There you go. That's it. See, that's commonsensical. That's American thinking. That's intelligent. But it's small government. You're talking about eliminating an entire branch of government that, by and large, is useless.
Absolutely. There's no reason for them to be there. Absolutely not. The National Guard is there. It's a military. It's a part of our the military branch of the government. Put them in there. Put them in the airports. Close the borders.
Yeah, and then, of course, use profiling at the airports, and this would never happen. Absolutely. What person listening to this show would believe that a six-year-old little white girl with two physician parents would be a terrorist? Tell me who in the world would frisk a child that of that age? Why would she do it?
Right.
The woman who did this was a coward and a pervert.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. This woman needs to be fired and arrested, and Napolitano needs to be fired. The buck stops here, doesn't it?
Couldn't agree with you more. It's our-
well, I couldn't agree with me more either. Indiana Amber, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Oh, yeah. Talking about this little girl being frisked, as a parent myself, I mean, why were these parents even throwing a fit? I mean, I would never even let somebody touch my
child. Well, I watched the video. The parents are very lovely, decent parents. In fact, the father is a physician, a good doctor. These are professional parents who are very mild and decent, and that's why they were shocked by what was going on. And the minute they said anything, the TSA supervisors threatened them, they said, with his eyes or her eyes, such as, if you say another word, we'll derail your entire family's vacation.
Yeah, I'd rather go to jail than let somebody like that touch my child. I mean, 6 years old? I mean, what is a six-year-old going to do? What do they think they're going to do, strap a bomb to him? Come on.
Let me explain something. That agent committed statutory rape. I'll keep repeating it until the American media hears it and the American people hear it. Let me say it again. That TSA agent committed statutory rape, said Michael Savage. That's my estimate. I watched the videotape. She put her fingers inside that baby's underwear. She's a pervert!
She's a pedophile. I mean, they put people in jail for less. If
you were walking through a mall and someone in the mall, when you turned your back, put their fingers down your daughter's underwear, what would happen?
Oh, I would pretty much almost get to the point of killing them. I mean, there would just not be.
So, but if a TSA agent does it because they're wearing a badge and they have a uniform, that's legal? Statutory rape becomes legal because the government agent did it?
And what about all those laws on the books to protect your children from things like that? I mean, are they just like, so it doesn't matter because now it's an airport?
Well, I rest my case. If I were conducting a courtroom trial, I would try that agent for having committed statutory rape. I would then try Janet Napolitano for gross incompetence, negligence, and also for covering up a crime. She's covering up this crime. See, she could have said this was outrageous, it shouldn't have happened, it's not going to happen again, and the agent's being punished. That would have been the end of it. Instead, she dug her heels in and said it was done professionally, and then she used that pimp on MSNBC to say, well, it was done professionally, but. Okay. Houston, Texas. Michael, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I wanted to call you and remind you that you predicted this over a year ago. I think it was about a year and a half ago. You said that the Department of Homeland Security, they're not going to be going after the terrorists. They're not going to be investigating the radical Muslims. They're going to be coming after us. They're going to be doing their stuff to us.
That's exactly right. Their target is the white middle class traveler. Let me repeat that again. The majority of people harassed by Homeland Security are white middle class travelers. The entire Obama administration is given over to attacking the middle class, which is largely white, since the nation is predominantly Caucasian. The entire government of Obama is a Marxist government that has targeted the middle class on the level of economics, on the levels of societal norms, etc. This entire administration is given to destroying the middle class. I'm sending you a copy of a book that spelled it out in detail, Trickle Up Poverty. It's going to go out to you free tomorrow. There's another big hour of the Savage Nation coming up momentarily on your local affiliate. All of these stories we have discussed can be found on michaelsavage.com. Remember, abuse of power is not a laughing matter.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage. let's go to michaelsavage.com. Coming in September, Savage's first thriller, Abuse of Power, based on a true story. What true story? Whose true story? Go to my website or Amazon.com and punch in Savage Abuse of Power and see. And Egypt. The left-wing vermin in the media have given us a new complex, the Iran-Egypt complex. That's right. The vermin on CNN in particular, who is celebrating the downfall of Mubarak and then fled to their next revolution, have now moved Egypt closer to Iran to, work against Israel and work against the U.S. and work against Saudi Arabia. If it were me, I would charge Anderson Cooper with war crimes or sedition. But then again, he's a golden boy, isn't he? No ratings, of course, but as you well understand, he's got certain people in his corner, or shall I say in his back pocket. Obama, you can't pee on our backs and call it rain. What's that? Go to my website and see. Poll delivers another blow to the White House. Niall Gardner, London Telegraph. Another poll, this one from the liberal Washington Post ABC, deep-seated public unease with the phony-in-chief. The phony-in-chief, still playing games, making believe he's in charge, way over his head. And as Mr. Gardner concludes, I will just read it to you. It is increasingly clear that the president's heavily panned speech last week on the budget deficit has failed to convince not only the American public, but the markets as well. With the huge vote of no confidence on Monday from credit rating agency Standard & Poor's, which cut its outlook for U.S. debt from stable to negative, the Obama presidency is looking remarkably out of its depth in the face of a massive deficit crisis, which it simply refuses to confront. Barack Obama remains wedded to outdated big government, high tax solutions to economic problems, but the American people are clearly not impressed. All of this and more, of course, the full article is on Michael Savage, and the other articles that made it to my site are: Russia abandons a $1 billion Western aid to weapons program. We've given them $1 billion to pay for the salaries of Russian weapons scientists. You're not going to believe the article. And how about the religion of peace? How's it doing over there in Nigeria? Well, there was a vote in Nigeria, and a Christian one. So the Muslim gangs went crazy, and they rioted, they mau-mau'd people, chopped them to death, and killed Christians. Not one word from Hillary Clinton. L.A. sheriff reads the Quran, shuns hard line with Muslims, embraces the Muslims. Obama, Passover message reflected in Muslim uprisings. I swear to God, he's using the Jews to sell Islam. UN to debate whether Mother Earth deserves human rights status. I didn't know that it was a nursing planet, but then again, I'm not up on my astronomy. In Kentucky, a Muslim slit the throat of his four children and raped and beat his wife with a hammer. But he said it was an honor killing. And of course, I'm sure Obama will pardon him and perhaps give him a job in the education ministry. Police in Louisville, taking a look at this piece of human offal, described in court a grisly scene when they walked into the home of Saeed Biad's family. Bring more of them in. Bring more of them in. We need more of them. We need more Muslims from the Middle East. Oh, yes. Islamic honor killing in Kentucky. Muslim slits throat of his three children, rapes his wife, and hits her with a hammer. Why? What did she do? No, she didn't cook the meatloaf wrong. He suspected her of infidelity. It happened in 06, but it's just coming to trial now for some reason. Did you know that Muslims commit 91% of honor killings worldwide? Oh, yeah. Didn't know that. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Read all about it. Police describe grisly scene in Somali man's trial and deaths of his children, one after the other. Biad allegedly raped his wife and beat her with a hammer before she was able to lock herself in a room. He then went to the rooms of each of his children, cutting their throats before throwing the knife in a garbage can. When Officer Crisley Hagen went to the home, she said she heard Amir crying inside, a sob I won't forget. Biad is not facing the death penalty through an agreement between defense and prosecutors, and the maximum sentence he faces is life in prison. You think I'm making it up? It's on michaelsavage.com. We didn't make the story up. I wish I did, but I didn't. With U.S. in support role, NATO's Libya mission is going in circles. It's really fabulous. It's really fabulous what's going on over there. The latest enemies of Iran and the psycho throwback Muslims, dogs and their owners. That's right, dogs and their owners. For the past decade, the Iranian depraved government of Ahmadinejad and the throwback mullahs have tolerated what it considers a particularly depraved and un-Islamic vice, a dog. No dogs in Iran. Western dogs. The keeping of pet dogs. Read about it. I pointed it out in Trickle Up Poverty in three of my other books. 1-800-449-8255. Lawsuit asks state to pay for inmate sex change. That's right. Lyra Lisa Stevens says she, even though he's a he, is harassed and sexually assaulted by male prisoners and needs surgery to be assigned to a woman's prison. I would call it the fox guarding the hen house, but I don't think that would apply. Obama's secret college is revealed in Trickle Up Poverty. And again, I remind you to go to the headline story coming in September, Savage's First Thriller, Abuse of Power. It'll shake up the world. All this and more on michaelsavage.com. Lutfi in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I'm with King, and I'm a Muslim. I pray five times, and I fast, and I do everything in a mosque. And I'm with him on this one because there's a lot of stuff in mosque we don't like, and we need somebody from our people to do it. But as for our people, they're doing nothing. So go, King, go for it. Yes, we will.
You know, Lutfi, it's interesting that you called. I didn't think I'd get one Muslim calling. But we had several, I saw several Muslims speaking there who I was impressed with because they're taking a lot of risk in doing so. One woman sat in the front row. She said she's been a Muslim since she came here. Her whole family has been peace-loving. But whenever she's raised the issue in a mosque about some of the hate she's hearing coming out of the imam's mouth, she said they've been vilified by the community. They're no longer invited to potluck dinners at their mosque. And they're looked upon with anger by people in the mosque. Is this something that happens to you?
You know, I did confront one of the imam one time, and I told him, if I want to hear what he just said right there, I could open the 1010 winds and I hear the news. We're here just to, listen to the Quran, and that's all. I don't want to hear any politics when I'm praying.
You know, it's very interesting. Now, most religions are apolitical in the United States of America. I mean, I've been in churches and synagogues my entire life. It is true that in the liberal branches of Christianity and Judaism, they have blurred the line between religion and politics. I don't find that in the Orthodox, rather the fundamentalist Christian churches. I never found that in the Orthodox Jewish communities. They generally are apolitical. They never bring it in there. They do the Bible, and God. They never do politics. In fact, they're religious about not doing politics, to be frank with you.
You know, if I'm interrupted, too much of everything is too much sometimes. So, my community or the Muslim community, they need to do more. They need to be more open. And the parents, especially the parents, they supposed to sit and talk with their kids because kids.
Are these mainly foreign-born imams who are coming in and poisoning the flock?
I say yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, let's let it go with that. I don't want to, you know, have you on the spot here. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Let's talk about the death penalty. Coleman in San Antonio is opposed to the death penalty. He's going to have his moment in the sun right now. Coleman, tell us why.
Yes, I'd like to say I'm opposed to it because I don't believe the state should be able to have a monopoly on violence against its people. I think that's a slippery slope, especially if it turns out that they screw up and they execute somebody innocent. They obviously can't bring them back from the dead.
Well, we've heard the argument about the innocent again, but you should understand that with the new science of DNA evidence, that more or less puts that argument to rest. There are videotape interrogations now. Easier access to DNA evidence that have been in place to prevent innocent people from being wrongly executed. So that's one point that I'd like to make, but I'd like to make another. Are you aware of the current case of a man whose son was brutally raped? and then killed by a man who was an alleged cannibal who was going to get out of jail, and the father said that if he gets out, he's going to kill him. Have you heard that story?
No, and obviously situations like that are horrible, and those monsters don't deserve the comforts of society. They should be chopping rocks in some penal colony somewhere.
Well,
but
that's a different story, which is maybe they're living a little too well in America's prisons. But the father has said publicly that if they do release this man, which they're going to do, he is going to track him down and kill him. I fear that they're going to arrest the father because we have such a perverted sense of justice in America that even a grieving father whose son was brutally murdered and raped by a psychotic killer can't even say what he'd like to do to him. He didn't actually commit the crime. We have such a perverted justice system. I support the death penalty for cases like this, by the way. I've heard the other side, and I've thought carefully about it because I'm actually a peace-loving man. I understand that we are a society that has moved away from the eye for an eye revenge mentality of the Bible, supposedly. But I'm going to ask you another question. Don't you think it serves as a deterrent? If a man is about to commit a crime that is punishable by death, wouldn't he choose a state where it's not punishable by death, where he's going to live on death row and have rather in the general population for the rest of his life? Wouldn't he choose that state?
Well, you could also argue that somebody who was crazy and was going to commit the crime anyway knew that they were possibly going to get off easy by getting killed as opposed to spending their life doing something, extremely tough, like some sort of forced labor, which is what people like that deserve in the first place.
Well, you know, we could change the argument if you wish and say, all right, you want to do away with the death penalty, then take everybody on death row in America and deport them to Mexico to serve out their life sentences in a Mexican prison. Would that work for you?
Why not? We shouldn't be forced to bear the financial burden of incarcerating these people.
And the cost of death row, keeping someone on death row, is through the roof. I agree with you. So let's go to Portland. Lawrence, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Mike, I'm against the death penalty because I believe that if you really wanted to punish that person, keep him alive, you know, he has his own punishment to think about it, you know, counting it all, and he's just going to torture.
But you know, Lawrence, you see, you're not a murderer. You're not an evil man. You would be guilty. Your conscience would eat you alive. But I don't think an average decent person such as yourself can get into the mind of a murderer who's on death row. They take pride in their work. They are considered heroes in prison. So, okay, you see, I'm lucky. I have a kaleidoscopic mind that what I was blessed with, and it could be a curse, by the way. You ask anybody with an advanced mind that has many compartments and many capacities in any sphere of work, and you'll find out that it's a blessing and a curse. But ever since I've been a child, I was able to really think what the other person was thinking, think through things and try to imagine what the other side was thinking until you say you can go crazy from it. How can you manage all of that and still have an opinion of your own? Well, through a very careful analysis of my own motivations and also what I think is right and wrong. And again, to explain myself, I guess I'm explaining myself a little too much once in a while. I guess I have to do it through long decades of watching things happen. So last night I saw a movie, by the way, called on television. I guess I watched too much television, I'll admit it. And a lot of my imagination is based upon, I would suppose, from too much television. I admit it. So last night I watched military history, but it was enough already. I couldn't take it. Famous tank battles in World War II. It's unbelievable, the heroism of America's troops. But then I moved to a movie called Felony. I forget the actor's name, but it's about a guy, middle-class white guy, who is at home with his wife and daughter, and some gangbangers come around to his property and threaten them, and he kills them with a bat. Oh, it's called Felon. Kills them with a bat. And he's put into prison for defending his wife and children. And there's a sadistic prison guard in the SHU. And it's pretty amazing. A family man convicted of killing an intruder must cope with life afterward in the violent penal system. Pretty well done, actually. Stephen Dorff, Marisol Nichols, and Vincent Miller. I don't know who they are, but... And so the family man is living the American dream with his girlfriend, Laura, and their son, Michael. Nice house. And their dream becomes a nightmare when Wade unintentionally kills a burglar that had broken into the house in the middle of the night on his lawn. So he's sent to trial and accepts a deal proposed by the prosecutor, being sentenced to 3 years in prison. And during the transportation, there's an incident in the bus, and Wade is framed and sent to the maximum security wing under the command of the corrupt Lieutenant Jackson. His cellmate, John Smith, was sentenced to life, revenging the death of his family. And he befriends Wade and gives helpful advice on what to do in prison to survive. But some of the scenes of the men thrown into an exercise yard for that 1 hour a day together, where he has to fight virtually every day for his life. Either you beat the other guy almost to a pulp or you get beaten to a pulp. But it leads you to believe that you don't want to. It leads you to come to the conclusion that, A, there are too many people in prison who don't belong there, which we know is true. I think the last number I read was we had over 2 million people in prison in America. The largest per capita number of people in prison proportionate to the population of the entire world are in the United States of America. It's an industry unto itself. It's worthy of 3 weeks of an investigation as to why so many people are incarcerated. It would lead you to conclude we have to stop the incarceration of people for petty crimes and for marijuana use. I am totally opposed to marijuana use, but I feel if somebody wants to poison their brain and make themselves into a bigger dope than they already are, let them go do it. I feel the same way about drugs, by the way.
Savage.
You know, terrorism has not gone away. Eric Stackelback is a CBN News terrorism analyst. He now joins us on the Savage Nation to talk about the threat of Islamic terrorism in our own backyard, something that the Obama administration refuses to acknowledge. Eric, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, Michael, always a pleasure to be here. And I want to kind of take the whole range today of the global radical Islamic movement. But I want to start in one of the hubs. To many people, it's probably an unlikely hub, but it's a place you and I, Michael, have discussed many, many times here on the Savage Nation over the past year. And that is London, or as we like to call it, Londinistan. Now, we discussed a few months ago, Michael, how I was on the ground interviewing wanted Islamic terrorists, men who are wanted in the United States who have links to Al-Qaeda, interviewed them face-to-face in London where they're walking around as free men and collecting welfare benefits from the state. And I also interviewed several other Islamic radicals there. We talked about this, Michael, and our listeners were outraged, got a lot of feedback about that. Well, here's an update on what's going on in London. As we said, we see enclaves, self-governing Islamic enclaves, is the future for Great Britain. And already we're seeing it. London's Daily Mail newspaper reported the other day that in the East London area of the city, now that's a heavily, heavily Muslim area. I walked those streets, Michael. I went inside the East London Mosque and talked to some of the mosque leaders there. You don't feel like you're in Great Britain. You don't feel like you're in the West. You feel like you're in Pakistan when you are in East London these days. That's just the way it is, and anyone who lives there will tell you that. Well, surprise, surprise, in the Hamlet Towers neighborhood of East London, probably the most notorious neighborhood for radical Islamic activity in the city, they've seen many, many terrorism arrests there. In this Tower Hamlets neighborhood of East London, Michael, you are seeing a push, an intimidation campaign by what they call the local Taliban. Islamic radicals in this neighborhood are now menacing any woman who does not wear a headscarf. They're threatening gays and they're threatening non-Muslims. Basically, anyone who does not subscribe to Islamic Sharia law is being threatened not only with physical violence, but with death. In this neighborhood in London, in a Western city, shopkeepers, shop owners are being threatened. Islamic thugs are coming into shops and asking female shop owners, female employees, not asking, telling them to wear the headscarf, wear a burqa, not only just a veil. They want to see these women in a head-to-toe burqa covering. And this is happening in this Hamlet Towers neighborhood. It's a very dangerous development. Banners are going up in this neighborhood now calling for Sharia. At Christmas time, Michael, there were banners, posters put up all around the neighborhood blasting Christmas as a pagan holiday and an abomination in the eyes of Allah. And there's a push now to establish Sharia in this neighborhood. This is London. This is one of the cradles of Western civilization. East London is not far from the downtown area. This is how far Great Britain has fallen. You have to say the entire country of Great Britain, because London is the hub. It's the capital city. It's one of the most storied cities in Western civilization. Now it is being overrun. And I can tell you, not only from this Hamlet Towers news that we're seeing come out, but also from my time there, Michael, London is a place that most people here in the West would not recognize any longer. And Great Britain, and we've said this many times, is on the road, as is Hamlet Towers, as these developments in that neighborhood show, Great Britain is on the road to having, we're in the year 2011 now, Michael, I'd say the year 2025, and that might be too liberal. It could be 2020. London is on the road to seeing self-governing Islamic enclaves pop up in heavily Islamic areas around that country, where are the Islamists, are judge, jury, and quite possibly executioner if they get their way. You will see fully functioning Sharia courts. You will see entire Muslim neighborhoods run by Sharia who do not answer to British common law, who do not respect British authority, and neighborhoods that are no-go zones for British officials and British police. Already we're seeing it throughout Europe. That exists already.
Well, it seems to me that liberals and socialists have gotten their way in London and Sweden and France. Is it possible to see it happen here? I see it happening myself.
These are the fruits of liberalism, of this sick, culturally suicidal leftist ideology, leftist platform that British officials and Western European officials in general, Michael, have pushed for decades now. These are the bitter fruits. Islamist enclaves throughout Western society. And I think we could see it come here to the United States without a doubt if we continue on the course we're on. The Obama administration has put this into overdrive. You know, when you say Sharia law is a threat to the United States, a lot of people laugh. In the mainstream media especially, Michael, they laugh and say it'll never happen. Even some so-called conservatives say it'll never happen. No way, never on U.S. soil. Well, I'm here to tell you, there is a push right now by radical Islamists in this country. And this is not some conspiratorial claptrap that I'm throwing out there. There is a concerted effort by Islamists in this country who are connected to the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the granddaddy of them all when it comes to jihadist groups. There is an effort by these groups to slowly creep into every center of power in this country, be it the media, be it government, be it the local or state level of government, education even. There is a concerted effort, and it's quite successful. Groups like CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America, this whole alphabet soup of American Muslim groups have made great inroads. These are people who are in meetings at the White House, in meetings at the Department of Justice, at the FBI, at the Pentagon. Michael, these Islamic radicals are helping to shape America's counterterrorism policies and America's quote-unquote Muslim outreach. So that's one part of how you can see Sharia make inroads. The second part is this mega mosque building. Ground zero is the tip of the iceberg. I've been in several rural areas around this country from coast to coast, some of the most unlikely places in the Bible Belt. In Nashville, Tennessee, the buckle of the Bible Belt, I've been to Nashville and the Nashville area around three times over the past 2 years, Michael, investigating the growth of mega mosques, multi-million dollar mosques in the South, where you only have a scattering of Muslims in some areas, yet magically, suddenly, a multi-million dollar mosque is popping up, and that's part of the strategy. Here's how it goes, Michael. I've seen it in the U.S. I've seen it in Europe. I've been on the ground in the enclaves, in the mosques, throughout the West in my time investigating this issue, and I've seen it time and time again. Once the mega mosque goes up, and it's not an Islamic center, they call it, do the Muslims, they call it a mosque. They don't say, hey, I'm going to the Islamic Center for Friday prayers. They say, we are going to the mosque. just as Protestants call, a mega church a church, an Islamic center is a mosque. The centerpiece is a large mosque of any Islamic center, and I've been to many of them. And what they do is they erect these Islamic centers. And then more and more Muslims, it's like a magnet, more and more Muslims move in. All of a sudden, people who've been living there for decades feel uncomfortable with the call to prayer echoing through their windows five times a day, and they move out. More Muslims move in. All of a sudden, all of the shops in the surrounding area around this large mosque have Arabic writing on the storefronts. And all of a sudden, women in burqas and men in flowing Islamic garb are a common sight on the streets. And all of a sudden, you don't recognize your neighborhood anymore, and it's become a Muslim enclave, a self-segregating Muslim enclave. This is the strategy. It's happened to great success in Europe, and now it's happening in the U.S. Look no further than Dearborn, Michigan, Michael, where a place where I spent some time, which is really, it's a shocking scene. Talk about feeling like you're in Beirut. Dearborn is the place. Dearborn right now is an Islamic enclave in this country, populated in large part by Muslims who don't want any part of the surrounding society. And that's what the Muslim Brotherhood and groups like this encourage. Don't take part in infidel culture, infidel society.
Well, I know what I think it's going to take to get our government to wake up and see what's going on in these neighborhoods. That would be another 9/11, God forbid. And even then, they'll blame the American people.
So, Michael, you would think the U.S. government would be proactive in trying to defend Western Judeo-Christian civilization, turn back what's obviously an Islamist threat. They know very well that the Muslim Brotherhood, or at least they should, they know very well what the Muslim Brotherhood stands for. Jihad is our way. Dying in the way of Allah is our highest hope. That's not me saying it. That's the Muslim Brotherhood's own slogan. The U.S. government has to know this. Yet they are aiding and abetting, is this administration aiding and abetting the Islamist infiltration at every level of American society? And they are encouraging this mega mosque push. As I said, ground zero is the tip of the iceberg. We're seeing mega mosques pop up. We're planned for Kentucky, Tennessee, Alaska, rural Wisconsin, suburban Southern California, places you would not expect. It's no coincidence. It is no coincidence. The Obama administration sees this, and they like it. It makes America increasingly, not only the Obama administration, the left in general, sees this, and they like this development because it means the landscape of America is changing. The face of America is changing. It's becoming a multicultural utopia, in their view, in which Judeo-Christian Western culture, civilization, thought, values is pushed out the window. Michael, we've said it time and time again, the left is so short-sighted. They'll get in bed with radical Islamists to further their ultimate goal of the downfall of Western civilization. But in the end, the left may find their heads on the chopping block if the Islamists win out. Michael, I get into all of this in my book, which comes out May 2nd. It's called The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat. And I'll tell you, I tackle all of these issues head on. This is no time to mince words, and political correctness is out the door for this one, Michael. The Terrorist Next Door, May 2nd.
Eric, thanks for coming on The Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you. Always a pleasure.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
I went to an event in San Francisco. It was a pathetic event filled with the lowest of the low liberals. You have never seen such out-of-town people. I've never seen anything like it in my life. You know, I don't know what they're doing to the DeYoung Museum, but whoever's running this should be fired because they've taken a first-class institution, they're turning it into something that's an addendum to the Garment Center. The last three major exhibits are about clothing and dresses. I've never seen anything like... How do they wreck a museum like this? Who are these fadus from Pacific Heights who take a great museum filled with great art and fill it with dresses and then bring in third-rate junk artists from New York to put them on mannequins and call this an exhibit? Anyway, I invited a congressman to join us at our table with a few friends. And He's a very interesting man, a very fine man. He's from another state. I had to go out of state to get a congressman, by the way. I don't have any representation. You talk about taxation without representation. My congressman, even though I live in California, is from Texas, to give you some idea. The communists run this state, as you well know. So he's there with me, flew out just to be with me. He just loves me so much, and I respect him so much. So he says, hey, Mike, how do you take these people? He looked around at this crowd with their addresses and this and that. And he said, well, let's take a walk around and look at everyone having their wine before the dinner. And he said, you know what we call this in Texas? I said, what? He said, this is Indian country. He said, let's take a stroll through Indian country. So, you know, I had one or two good moments there. But you have never seen such hypocrisy and such provincialism as you would have seen last night. It would take a veritable Voltaire to properly describe the low level of these people. They gave a speech about the dresses on display, and a guy had the nerve to quote Reader's Digest as a source of great esteem for this exhibit. The man quoted Reader's Digest. This is the chief fundraiser there, and they cheered him. These goofballs. Now, you say, why are you wasting our time here to 8 to 10 million listeners talking about a museum event, Mike? Because these are the people who have destroyed America. These are the psychopath drug addicts across America who are either on prescription drugs or other drugs, who don't know what the hell is going on around them, and they're dangerous. And they're the ones who put Obama in power. This is Nancy Pelosi's backyard. That's all I can say to you. Is there anyone listening to this show in the San Francisco area who goes to the Young Museum who agrees with me that psychos have taken over the museum by putting on trunk shows that more rightly belong at the Concord Hotel in Monticello, New York in the 1960s? They have put on three shows in a row at the Young Museum that have to do with designer dresses. What does this have to do with an American museum? Who is it who's usurped? You see, this is an interesting paradox for me. What has been done to a great institution like a museum like this, with left-wing fanatics taking over the museum and basically debasing it, is exactly what's going on at the White House and in the U.S. in general. The same low-life mentality. And by the way, it's people who think that they're better than everybody. But when you actually see what they do, they're not better than everybody. They're below the average person. They're below the average person. Do you understand what I'm saying to you, mister? Do you have any idea why I'm talking about dresses here on the Savage Nation today? Everything can be seen in a shmata. I mean, I thought when I left New York 30 years ago, I was leaving the Garment Center. Little did I know. I mean, I ran away from my friends who went into the Garment Center and set out on my own odyssey. And here I am, a famous author and talk show host. And now I come back to San Francisco where I'm living, and I am interested in fine art. And what do I wind up with? They're putting in trunk shows. Ugly dresses. You can't believe this. Installed in the museum with lowlifes from New York flying in to dress the mannequins. And they're referring to Reader's Digest as an example of how high up in the food chain they are because they were mentioned in Reader's Digest. You understand why I'm mentioning this? Last night was an example of the liberals dancing on the back deck of the Titanic. I never saw such out of town people pretending to be such high art people in my life. My flesh crawled. We all left early. No, and Teddy was not allowed there, even though his gray suit would have been a great tuxedo. He was not allowed in. He probably would have been a great addition to the event, believe me. But anyway, the reason I'm talking about what's going on to our great museums, and they are wonderful institutions of Western civilization. I saw this crap happening 20 years ago with all of the exhibits that started to come in, the 10th-rate garbage. But now it's reached an apogee, a low point, where they're actually bringing out trunk shows of old dresses from storehouses and calling it a museum exhibit. How do they get excited over this? And you should have seen the women with the gowns they were marching around. It was unbelievable to me. Then there's an old Secretary of State who shows up. Every time he shows up, the guy can hardly move. He was a good secretary. Wherever he shows up in this city, the cameras break out like the King of England just arrived. He is dazed, doesn't know what he's doing. Oh, here comes the head of the class walked in. What a provincial. You really would need to be Voltaire to write this correctly. And I'm Voltaire. I'm the new Voltaire because in my book, Abuse of Power, which will come out in September, August, September from St. Martin's Press, it's about a terrorist, attempted a terrorist attack in America. that my hero stops with his ex-Vietnam vet guys in the book. It's fantastic. It's unbelievable. One of the key scenes is set in the museum at a black tie dinner, almost exactly like the one I just went to. And you'll see the Voltairean aspects of my abilities when it comes out. I will be the talk of the town. Trust me on that one. But out of town, like you cannot believe, provincial, the museums are being destroyed in the country the same way the country is being destroyed, gutted from within by people who think they're so superior. What are they all on, medication? Is that it? I mean, you look at their children, half of them are drug addicts or in psychopath in homes for the psychos. Not one of their children has ever amounted to anything. All they know how to do is wear $3,000 belts. They're on all medication. The kids are all ruined. Have you noticed my show has gotten better over the last few months? Do you know why? Because I'm flapping less. And I'm coasting more. I've watched old guys sometimes, how efficiently they move, or how efficiently they... Well, you know, it's very hard to describe. You ever watch an old boxer? I don't mean old boxer. There are no old boxers. In sports, I don't know if that analogy holds up, because the guys break down very young. But there are professions where an individual will do things more with less energy, let's put it to you that way, and do it perfectly. Flap less, coast more. A painter, for example. I've told the story before. I don't want to beat this up.
Savage.